Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church here in sunny Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Pierce. I'm the pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry and to a community called Bread and Belonging, supported by Lutheran Campus Ministry and St. Nathan's Episcopal Church in Boulder, Colorado, here on the campus of the University of Colorado, where it is not sunny, Matt. It's in the 40s today. Fall is falling.
What am I going to have to bring when I go to this Clem Snide concert that's coming? Do I need to wear warm clothes?
Here's the thing, Matt. People in Colorado really like telling you how unpredictable the weather is. So maybe this is an outdoor show. Maybe it's an indoor show, Matt. We just don't know.
Amazing. Amazing stuff. It's all relative. People in LA say that too. You never know about the weather.
Could be 68.
It just means different things.
Could be 72. For us, it means it could be a foot of snow, Matt, on November 12th. Or it could be 70 and sunny.
Incredible stuff. Maybe there will be hoodies at the merch table.
Oh, fingers crossed. But we need to do them, Matt. This became a thing.
Can there be those special hoodies?
Well, that's what I was saying. Became a thing among our small friend group here, Matt, that during the pandemic, I drove up to Leadville, Colorado, which is America's highest city, is the designation there. One of the first, like, gold boom places in Colorado. So a lot of interesting, like, literature and stuff comes from back in those days. There was an opera house, like, boom bust town. And there is a place up there called Melanzana that make literally these hoodies that I'm currently wearing. Yes, I'm currently wearing one that are beloved by people in the outdoors world, especially ski people, ski and snowboard people, snow sports people love them. But the thing is, you can only buy them at the store in Leadville. And so when you see somebody wearing one, they're pretty distinctive. They have a distinctive, like, collar cuff kind of thing in the front, can come up above your, like, nose and stuff. And there's, like, a checkered, like, micro fleece kind of pattern to it. And they're all weird colors. And so when you see somebody wearing one, you, like, can give them a knowing, like, nod. Like, yeah, you got a melee, too. And during the pandemic summer number one, my family, it was up in the mountains, and we ended up swinging through Leadville. And it became a giant thing, and there was a huge line because they had just opened the store up for shopping for the first time after the pandemic, because you hadn't been able to get them all summer long. And I stood in line for hours, Matt. And I just decided you couldn't, like, try stuff on because it was, like, super, like, pandemic protocol things going on. And so I bought two sizes of the hoodie because I was like, here's what I'll do. I'll just get two of them, and the one that fits, and you can sell them on eBay and stuff for, like, a lot of money, or for more than you paid for them, because you can't buy them anywhere else. And I did it, Matt. I got the hoodie that I like, and it turned out the smaller size was too small for me. And I never got around to putting it on eBay, and our friend Adam really liked the story of the Melly hoodie. And made lots of comments when I would wear it in our happy hour Zooms. And eventually I just decided I'd send it to Adam. And so now Adam and I have matching hoodies. And we went on our backpacking trip this summer. Adam, of course, brought his hoodie. And I brought mine because I'm a cool Colorado and outdoor person. And everybody else in the group made a whole lot of fun of us every day. And Matt, like, you or I, perhaps, right, would be like, I wonder if we could do some things to not be made fun of, like, every minute of every day. But Adam, of course, like, reveled in, like, the attention, really, of, like,
yeah,
yeah. You know, he would, anytime I had mine on, he would, like, run back to his hammock and find it and put it on him and come, like, stealthily come sit down right beside me with his matching hoodie. So, Matt, what we got to do when you come out for the Clem Snide Show is we got to make a quick trip up to Leadville.
Sure, quick trip.
Get you a matching melee.
Sounds good.
As well.
sounds great. I heard there would be a merch tent. I didn't realize the merch tent would require a drive to get
6 hours round trip.
Good.
To get your hoodie.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Oh. how's you're coming out. We're excited about that, Matt. I'm a little concerned. I have a number of issues, Matt, about the Clem Snide show. That if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that I'm hosting a house concert with Clem Snide. Did I happen to mention that to the senior warden of St. Aidan's Episcopal Church, whose daughter happens to be national touring recording artist Esme Patterson? Yeah, I did, in the hopes of landing concert number two, Esme Patterson, at my house. We'll see how it goes. No news yet, but he brought it up. He said, you know, I'll have to talk to Esme. And as my first gig, the first show at really Colorado's hottest new outdoor music venue approaches, I have a number of issues, Matt. One, this has been a pretty funny story, Matt, and when I have pretty funny stories, it turns out I tell that to everybody. And so I've told this story to everybody because I think it's pretty funny, as established. And so now a lot of people know about it, and evidently in my storytelling has had some implication of invitation. And as you saw in the emails between myself and Eve of Clem Snide, he was thinking more of like a chill after dinner drinks, like around the fire vibe.
Yeah.
And I've told a lot of people now about it. So I've got to figure out a guest list that might meet Eve's expectations and not upset a lot of people.
Are you going to have to disinvite people like President Obama?
I haven't like made formal invitations. It's just like when somebody tells you the story that they're having like a house concert with like a famous person, understandably people think they're invited.
Yeah, you're going to have to make an Eventbrite, I think.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll do, Matt. This is what we'll do. I'll have some inner circle people, Matt, like yourself included. You've already bought the plane ticket. You've shown the most commitment to the concert of anyone, so you're allowed. Rumors were my mother-in-law was looking at plane tickets the other day. So if you buy a plane ticket, you get first dibs. Then I'm going to have like six other tickets, and I'm going to put them on eBay and auction them off, right, to cover Club Inside. So limited supply, and everybody's got a shot. And the proceeds go to charity. They go to the Clem Snide Preservation Society.
It's a good charity.
I've learned a lot about it lately, and I really believe in it.
Amazing. It's a good plan. It's a good plan.
It'll work.
Well, I'm excited to start listening to Clem Snide.
Oh.
I'm going to have to make a playlist. It did send me on a deep dive into the TV show Ed, which I vaguely remembered, and then was like, oh, yeah.
Was it about a bowling alley?
A number of people in that show. Yeah, there was a bowling alley. So he was like a hotshot lawyer, and then like everything went wrong, so he moved back to his hometown in like Ohio or something. Yeah, and then he bought a bowling alley, and then he was known as like the bowling alley lawyer, you know? So I'm sure there must have been a lot of like hijinks with him helping people in town. But at the same time, he was trying to chase like his high school crush, you know, who was played by the lady who then went on to be on Modern Family. So I don't know. It just, yeah. It was one of those shows. But then what I discovered was, unlike a lot of shows that have become popular in streaming, you can't find it streaming. It's not like, yeah. So people were like, why is this show missing? This was like a good show that was on for four like solid seasons in the early 2000s.
Shouldn't it be like interesting stuff. Peacock Plus?
Yeah, you would think so. And they were like, it was like one of the first like comedy dramedy kind of things, right? Which are now like every show has to be a comedy dramedy, right? Like it was like an hour long show, like all those little things that we think of now with peak TV. Like Ed was one of the pioneers of that like style. Interesting stuff.
My biggest complaint about the reboot Mighty Ducks series, Matt. Right, far be it from me to criticize Emilio Estevez. But the central premise of Mighty Ducks, the original movie, was Emilio Estevez is a hotshot lawyer who was a hockey phenom as a as a youth. But then he gets like a DUI and has to do community service, and he has to coach like the worst hockey team in all the Twin Cities, right? In the reboot, he went from there, became a successful college hockey coach until he broke some NCAA rules and was banned or whatever. For charitable reasons, it turns out, in the end. But as you recall, you probably recall, Matt, towards the end, he ends up in some like legal issues with the Minnesota Amateur Hockey Association at the end, and they're trying to get him like reinstated. And Lorelei, his love interest, who's a paralegal, like is like, I know lawyer things, and her like the lawyer she works for like busts in and like saws everything while Emilio Estevez stands there dumbfounded. I just want to be like, hey guys, remember Emilio was the hotshot lawyer. Like he's standing there like he doesn't understand legal things. And I was very confused by that.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds very confusing. Definitely a plot hole. Did you write Disney Plus? Did you write Disney Plus?
I have written a letter. Dear Mr. Disney Plus, I have not received that Phoebe Bridgers and Disney Plus. Neither one have responded to me yet.
Well, maybe after this concert.
Well, I'm thinking maybe sending another tweet out to Phoebe. Let her know she could be the opener. Because I've already booked the headliner already.
You should definitely do that. Also, we have to figure out when we're going to ask. Tell him, first of all, tell him that we have a podcast. second, ask him to come on it. And third, see if he'll write us a theme song. Because if we could have the same songwriter that wrote the theme song for Ed write the theme song for our podcast 20 years later, that'd be pretty great.
For free as well. Can we?
For free.
Yeah. We don't want to.
It only needs to be like 30 seconds. Just, yeah. It'll be great.
Here's what we'll do, Matt. You know, producer Nick is good with the beats and stuff, right? I'm going to secretly record Clem saying, like, Eve saying some stuff. I'm going to get that audio to Nick and have Nick remix it into the new intro.
And then you could add some banjo to it. And it would be like you're doing a duet. It'll be great. Right.
Interpolation. Isn't that what they call it these days?
That's what they call it. That's what they call it. Good stuff. Well, I suppose we should talk about some text today, Zach.
I thought Job was over last week, to be honest with you.
I know. He's still here. Job won't
leave.
That
is kind of the point of Job. He's still here. He's that guy at church like, why is this person come? Why are they still here? I don't get it.
Well, I think that about everyone. Why is everyone still here? Oh, it's an amazing thing. Job 42. When, is this the last one? This got to be the last one.
I pray to Jesus.
Well, he dies at the end of it, so I think it's got to be the last one. Job 42, 1 to 6, 10 to 17. Job answered the Lord. Oh, he answers the whirlwind. I know that you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. This sounds like my kids when they're like, well, what I meant was I wasn't really doing the wrong thing. This is what I meant by what I said. I know that you do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Okay, he's confessing here, and I will speak. I will question you, and you declare to me, that's a quote, I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. And therefore I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. The Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he had prayed for his friends. And the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. Then there came to him all his brothers and sisters and all who had known him before. And they ate bread with him in his house. And they showed him sympathy and comforted him for all the evil that the Lord had brought upon him. And each of them gave him a piece of money and a gold ring. The Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginning, and he had 14,000 sheep and 6,000 camels and 1,000 yoke of oxen and 1,000 donkeys. And he also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He named the first Jemima, the second Keziah, and the third Karen Hapuch. In all the land, there were no women as beautiful as Job's daughters, and their father gave them an inheritance along with their brothers. After this, Job lived for 140 years and saw his children and his children's children four generations. And Job died, old and full of days. Word of God, word of life.
What I finally have understood, Matt, is that the book of Job is essentially like a Squid Game.
Okay, explain.
At the end, he goes through all this pain and torture and suffering, and in the end, he gets rewarded with a giant, clear pig full of 45 billion won.
So basically the same plot?
Yeah. If you have not seen Netflix's sensational, latest sensation, they say, we don't know because we don't get ratings for Netflix shows, they say it's the biggest Netflix show of all time. It's pretty good. I really enjoyed it, man. I just finished it. It's gorier than I like shows. So Hannah did not watch it. She checked out. But it was clever enough, I thought. And the characters were compelling enough that it really did hook me. The idea is they take a bunch of people, 200-ish or so people, who are all heavily indebted and will, like, never be able to, like, work their way out of their debts. Essentially, think about it. Like, if you took a bunch of recent college grads from Lutheran colleges with religion degrees, you know, they're never going to get out from underneath that student loan. And they approach them to come play these games. And if you win, you win 45 billion won, which is a lot of money to those folks. And it's a fairly interesting ethical-like situation. They don't know going into it, to the first game, that when you lose the game, you die. But they play like a version of red light, green light, and the red light means you die. And they learn that very quickly, obviously. But then
this creepy doll, right?
Yeah, creepy doll. But then there's like actually like some interesting ethical stuff, right? That they came with their own free will. And then if at any point more than half the people want to stop the game, they can leave. And so, spoilers for this first episode, they... after that first game and how horrible things were, they take a vote and they leave. They half the people want to stop, so they leave. They leave the place. But then, if more than half the people ever want to come back, the game will restart. And so they do. They all come back, again, willingly knowing what they're going into to play the game. And it is all for sport in the end. It turns out that this is, you know, like horse racing for these insanely wealthy people. And they're betting on the contestants and stuff, which is not that far away from where Job started, right? With God and Satan and all these other, like, celestial deities are hanging out in the clouds and essentially making what appears to be a pretty lighthearted, not thought after bet of, I bet you he'll suffer all the way to the end. And that's what happens for Job and for... A Gihon.
Wow. What a connection to the pop culture event of our time.
Wow.
I mean, maybe Squid Game is more satisfying than Job.
Probably.
Because having read now for about 4 weeks and now coming to this conclusion, I find it deeply unsatisfying. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it's supposed to be a happily ever after ending, but I don't feel that way. I think this reading of Job, I've just found it deeply unsettling, the whole thing.
Well, you know, that's just another Squid Game comparison. the finale, because if Squid Game is the most successful Netflix show of all time, there's got to be a season two, right?
Right.
So how do you do a season two with this game that appears very final? So the final episode, the finale, was not mostly about the last game and winning, right? But that his, like, guilt, dissatisfaction, disillusionment with winning, and he's not spending the money, and his life didn't change. Like, he's just really, he's with you there, you know? Like, he went through the Job experience and did not find it satisfying. He's full of anger, like, at the people, and, you know.
What do you do with it? Is this Is this a preachable text? I know I feel like the old line about it, the Sunday school line, would be something like, see, you just hold on. You hold on to your faith, and in the end, it'll all come back to you. But I don't think it really works.
No, I don't think that.
So is there a different good news?
I have some really weak good news, if you'd like to hear that, Matt. And my weak good news, maybe we can find a way to strengthen it in the gospel and find something with some real flesh on the bone. But what I'm thinking is, this doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem related to me, right? That, like, it's not worth it. That's not how life really works. That because Job wrote out all of this suffering, now he's rich and wealthy and happy and stuff. And so my very weak good news is that the bad stuff and the good stuff come to you, right? They fall upon us, and it doesn't make sense. But sometimes good stuff actually falls, happens upon us just as much as the bad. It's not strong good news. Yeah. I wouldn't feel good preaching that, but...
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's good. It reminds me, I've been watching a lot of Kay Bowler stuff lately. I read her second book, and then we were talking about a Bible study. And she's been interviewed on the Today Show, which is always just so interesting, because it's... I don't know. We live in an interesting world. But she... She tells this story where she goes to, like, the hospital bookstore, and there's all this Joel Osteen, like, live your best life, and she's, like, just had surgery for her cancer, and she's carrying, like, her, and she's just like, you can't sell these books. Like, you cannot sell these here. Like, this doesn't work, right? And of course, like, she's built her career on talking about how, like, this theology is bullshit, like, that you just have faith enough, and then you get all the riches. That's not really how life works, right? And so, but then the interviewer is like, so what do you do with God then? Like, what kind of conversations did you have with God? Do you still believe this stuff? And she's like, yeah. She's like, I still do believe that, you know, there is a story that we can be living in where God will bring it together in the end. But I might not be in that place, right? Like that there, but in the mm-hmm. in between now and then, like, good and bad things happen, right? And we don't control that how strong our faith is, right? Like, that's not how good and bad things come, right? Like, you can still believe that, like, there is a good ending at the end of days, that we're like, that God is working toward the good of all things, but that doesn't mean that, like, that's gonna happen in our lifetime. So that's even gonna happen, like, this week if I try hard enough, right?
Yeah.
And that also seems to be one of the theses of the book of Job, right? Like why does God choose this moment to restore everything? Like, maybe there's a way to read this story in which, like, it isn't, well, Job held onto his face and so everything, but that it's like, no, like, yeah, eventually, like, all will be restored, but guess what? You don't know when that's not, like, dependent on you. That's not actually dependent on Job's faith or anything else. It's capricious the way life works.
Yeah.
So there's anyway, what you've said, but
there's a new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm coming out, and they just released the trailer, and I really enjoy Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, and evidently there's gonna be an episode about I'm really excited for it, an episode where someone asked Larry to pray about something the way that you might ask someone to, like, pray for a sick person. And guess what? Larry David's not going to, like, do the social nicety of saying, oh, yeah, yeah. Right? He tells him no to his face, that he's not going to do it. And eventually they argue, and the guy says, how do you know prayer doesn't work? And Larry David goes, because I'm still bald! This is an important place, if you're preaching Job this week, to go back to some of the stuff we talked about at that first reading from Job in the first chapter, where it's so clear this is, it's so over the top and wild, and God is so capricious. This isn't historical account of Job, right? There's literary genre going on here, and that the ridiculousness of the reason, the rationale, and the ridiculousness of the level of misfortune that falls upon Job, that's hard to actually really read like straight, is matched here by the over the top unrealisticness of the fortune that falls upon him as well. That I don't think, like, we shouldn't switch how we read it into a more literal account just because it's good stuff now instead of, like, hordes of locusts or sores all over his body and God making a bet like Michael Jordan in with his security guard to get this thing in motion.
Yeah. Good Last Dance reference. Good. Zach's doing the shrug. You can't see this. It's an audio medium, but he's doing the shrug.
Shrug.
Doing the shrug right now. Well, let's see if this has any connection to Mark.
Jesus is what this story is about. Jesus and his disciples came to Jericho, and he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho. We got in and we got out. That's classic Mark. I had never noticed that before. This is good. Jesus and his disciples go into Jericho in the next sentence. And as Jesus and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, they definitely went to Jericho. We want to emphasize that. But as on their way out of town, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, it says. That's literally what Bartimaeus means in Hebrew, right? Bar, like bar mitzvah, son. Son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, Bartimaeus began to shout out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And many sternly ordered him to be quiet. But he cried out even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he is calling you." So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And then Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "My teacher, let me see again." And Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has made you well." And immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. The good news of Jesus.
So, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus. So in the Greek, is it just Bartimaeus, Bartimaeus?
Let me look that up for you, man. I wondered that
one. Like, feels redundant. It feels redundant, but then I wonder, is it supposed to parallel Jesus, son of David, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus? Is it? I don't know. Maybe not.
These are great questions, Matt. I was prepared to talk all about Bartimaeus. I enjoy talking about Bartimaeus, but not... Have not done that. Research. Actually, it uses a different word. Interesting. Use. Use. The transliteration. Use of Timaeus.
Is it use of David then?
Yes. A version.
See? I bet that's what's going on. I wonder why.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
That is interesting, man.
Never noticed that before. Well, I got notes, but you're prepared to talk about Bartimaeus.
Oh, well, it wouldn't be. Here you
go. Are you excited? No,
this is one of those language things, Matt. Bartimaeus is Hebrew, and the Greek is Greek. So, Hugh's his son. Right.
Sure.
So it wouldn't be exactly one to one. You wouldn't use bar of Timaeus. But are you familiar with Timaeus?
No.
Matt, you're a philosophy major. You should know these things. Timaeus is a dialogue, famous dialogue of Plato.
Right.
That does a ton of cosmology stuff. And it happened in the around three, where's it at? Boop, 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 third century BCE. So predates Jesus and our story here. And Timaeus is he's a fictional character that's giving you, or a character, Plato's writing from the perspective of a Timaeus who describes the universe. And one of the things that Timaeus says in the middle of those dialogues is Timaeus says, the worst thing that could happen to you in life is to be blind. Because if you're blind, you couldn't see the stars, and you wouldn't be able to understand the universe at all. Mm. And seeing the stars is the most important part of understanding your place in the world.
Wow.
And so here, really what we get is Mark's rebuttal to Plato, where you have Bartimaeus, because one of the things that's critical in Mark is nobody knows who Jesus is, right? Messianic secret. We don't get a true confession from a non-demon in Mark until Mark chapter 9, when Peter says, you're the son of, he calls him Son of God, doesn't he, in Mark chapter 9, the confession. And then he, like, backtracks immediately. But you don't get these confessions from humans. And the only person in Mark, outside of maybe Peter, who clearly sees who Jesus is the blind man. And so it is the upside-down cruciform nature of the world that I think Mark is proclaiming here, that the only person who can see the way, who can really understand the world, is the blind man. And that is in such stark contrast to Plato's Timaeus.
Wow. Good research.
Boom! I believe it's a Gordy out of, gosh, what's his book? Gordon Lathrop's,
Gordy.
Holy, oh, sorry, we're not supposed to use nicknames anymore. I apologize to Dr. Gordon.
Yeah,
his cosmology book, Holy Thing, Ground.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff.
And that's where I would connect it to the Job, that the Job perhaps is a farcical tale about the illusion that reveals the illusion of certainty and clarity that Job like is feeding the parts of us that wants real clarity, that wants to know exactly why bad stuff happens or good stuff happens, and you can see how ridiculous that is, or how ridiculous the answers that we come up with are. And here you get turned around and pointed in the other direction, that if you want to really see, you have to close your eyes.
Yeah, I think that notion of perspective is super important in this text. So the last time I heard this text preached is 3 years ago. I was at Shekinah Chapel, and I got to hear now Bishop Yehiel Curry preach on this text. Always a delight to hear Pastor Curry, now Bishop Curry, preach. But it was on this text, and the thing I remember him repeating over and over was that Bartimaeus was a privileged person, that he had a privileged position. He was like playing with his expectations of how we think about this blind beggar. And, you know, we see that in all kinds of different ways. Like the way he said is that he was positioned in such a way that he was able to be there when Jesus passed by. And there's some things that we see here already, like the disciples come to Jericho. So Jericho is part of this road to Jerusalem. All the pilgrims are traveling this road. It's the last stop before that last leg of the journey to Jerusalem. Disciples and a large crowd are leaving that road. He's by the roadside. Gotta love that marking stuff on the way. He's like, I think it's both that he's blind, right? This idea that like, in order to see, you have to close your eyes, what you just said, preach. And also, there's this contrast, Ched Myers in Binding the Strong Man lifts up this contrast of this blind beggar with the rich man that comes to Jesus. And so here's somebody on the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, but he seems to get it. Where the rich man didn't get it, couldn't follow through, here this person in a different position on that socioeconomic pyramid gets it. And what Mark is trying to say about perspective and how we really see and who is able to see. It reminds me of the first time that I went to Mexico and saw a mural where the United States were the aggressors. The United States were the villains in the mural. I think that was the first time in my life that I'd seen that. And I thought, holy crap, the world looks different depending on where you're standing. And that's true for Bartimaeus as well. I think the other thing that I'd love to... Oh, another rich man connection. This throw off his cloak. I thought this was interesting. So the cloak was how he'd receive alms, ready to lay it out. And so this cloak was actually pretty important to him, not just to keep him warm. So when he throws up that cloak, he's throwing off his alms gathering tool, right? So where the rich man couldn't sell all that he had, here the blind man does it right away. And goes to Jesus, right? He gives it up immediately and goes all in for Jesus. So just a contrast there. I love the crowd in this story, though, too, because the crowd switches allegiances really fast. They're like, no, be quiet. And then Jesus calls, oh, he's calling to you. But I think it's almost like, it's almost a precursor to Jerusalem, right, where the crowd's like, hey, we're going to welcome Jesus on Palm Sunday, and then we're going to turn on him really quick. So be careful of crowds. Lots going on in this little passage.
Just great advice these days to be careful of crowds.
Right? Yeah, populism, not always the best option.
This is a good one, Matt. This is one of those, as we, Matt, you and I, as lifelong Dodger fans, get ready for game 5 tonight.
Lifelong?
Oh, yeah. Lifelong Dodger fans, get ready for game 5 against the Giants tonight. This is one of those texts that that curveball that just hangs up in the zone there, and that that formerly Cody Bellinger would have crushed as a preacher. It's the pitch they leave just fat right down the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The kind that Clayton Kershaw pitches. No, not going to go there. There's a lot going on. Lots to work with. Well, any closing thoughts on the gospel?
It's just a good one, man. I don't think I'm preaching this week, but you could probably have a lot of fun pretty easily with this one.
Awesome.
So do it.
So do it. You only got a few weeks left of Mark. Take advantage. Luke Manuel Miranda's coming. Ooh. What?
I forgot about that. That's good.
Right? What are we listening to?
Well, I'm going to put one of my daughter's favorite songs on the playlist this week, Matt. Lots of good blind songs. I'm going with Blinding Lights by The Weeknd, which is a great one. And then the perfect song, I think, for this gospel is an older one, but Etta James' I'd Rather Go Blind.
Nice. I like it. When I saw those songs in there, I thought, Rather Go Blind. Oh, I know a song with that line. Staring at the Sun by U2 from 1997's Pop, which is also a great song. I'm not the only one staring at the sun, not the only one who'd rather go blind. And then I was like, huh, are there any other YouTube songs about blindness? There are! Love is Blindness! Off of 1991's Octang Baby. It's an all YouTube playlist. On my end. Wow. On my end of things.
One week, Matt. I'll,
You'll allow it?
We'll line it all up and just be straight YouTube. When we do the liturgy, YouTube liturgy. There we go. YouTube mess.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. Eutucharist. Is that a thing? That's a thing, right? Eutucharist?
It was a thing. I don't know that anyone's doing them anymore.
Well, what a play on words. A portmanteau.
What a portmanteau. I think that's what we got.
I think that's it. Next week.
Next
guest.
Week.
Guest on the podcast next week to talk about some Reformation Day stuff. It's going to be a good one. We've been doing the guests lately. We're going to keep them coming.
Yeah, he's going to talk about vocation, and I have already done some research. Look what I found.
Oh, we're going to read some Frederick Buechner. Are we supposed to do Frederick Buechner Book Report Week? Is that?
I read some Frederick Buechner and I read an original blog post just to prepare. I'm so excited, Zach. Battle Royale. Let's go.
Matt, in the merch table of my dreams for this podcast, right, I can only assume that one day, hopefully very soon, we'll just tour the country, Matt, and we'll have a merch table after the live pods. And we're going to have a number of good shirts, okay? But one of them needs to be insulting to Frederick Buechner.
No!
Right? And on it, here's the other visual piece. I want Frederick Buechner to look like, what's the Muppet Beaker?
Yeah.
Frederick Beaker? That's what I'm going to start calling him.
Beep, 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 beep. Incredible. Incredible stuff. So tune in next week to hear my defense of Frederick Buechner. It's going to be great.
Ooh. Oh, it is Beaker. Frederick Beaker.
Well, it's been real.
Real vinyl.